Coffee Conversations about Influencer Marketing is brought to you by Influential, a strategic consultancy that takes the guesswork out of influencer marketing for your brand. We provide much-needed strategically crafted frameworks on how to implement influencer campaigns specific to your brand needs.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another fabulous edition of Coffee Conversations about Influencer Marketing. We did say we were switching things up this time around. But before we get to switching things on, welcome to my co-host, my partner in influence, El Dodinshek. Hi, Anne. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm great. Welcome to it.
Thanks, man. I think just before we introduce our amazing guest this week, just ask everyone, please remember to download and subscribe. Yeah. And if you like what you hear, please send it on to your friends.
Yeah.
We're always looking for new listeners. So please help us out, man.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for that. Welcome to our guest. He's joining us all the way from the United Kingdom.
A snowy United Kingdom.
He says it's nippy today, but the studio is nippy as well. But that's something we can control with the touch of a button.
Yeah.
Scott Guthrie, welcome, welcome, welcome.
Well, thank you very much, the pair of you, for having me. I'm thrilled to be part of your podcast.
We are thrilled to have you.
Looking forward to having a chat with you the next hour or so. Yeah, so thank you for having me on board.
No, it's a huge pleasure. Thank you for making the time. We know you're super, super busy.
Thank you. And for those listening, so Scott Guthrie is a leading influencer marketing consultant, marketing event speaker and author. And what we want to do today is for him to journey with us through his world of influencer marketing. From the perspective of his space and the markets that he plays in. But we also want to continue to unearth reasons to believe in influencer marketing. Should it continue being a huge part of influencer marketing strategy, or it's something that we need to kick to the curb? And Scott is going to help us do just that today. Thank you so much, Scott. And let's jump right into it.
Well, thank you very much. Well, thank you for the epic intro. I can only hope that I live up to it. But
I hope so too.
I will certainly do my best.
We'll cut the mic if you don't live up to it.
Play some music, absolutely, yeah.
So, Scott, please tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're coming from, and your involvement in influencer marketing.
Yeah, well, thank you. Well, I'm an independent influencer marketing consultant, and I emphasize the independent bit because I headed up Ketchum's influencer marketing practice in the London P&L for a while back.
Okay, that's awesome.
I'm a Ketchum alumni, one of your sister companies.
It's an awesome global company, and yeah. I was thrilled to be asked to be part of that fraternity. I was only there for a short while back in 2016.
Okay,
but I emphasise the independent bit because when you see blogs being written and when you see reports being produced, they are invariably written by providers, by agencies, or platforms with skin in the game.
All right.
So look at the methodology behind a lot of these reports. They're, you know, the questions have been phrased in such a way to elicit the answers that the producer wants to create. I play on the bit about being independent. And yes, you kindly referenced that I'm a conference speaker, but I'm also a guest university lecturer as well.
Right.
And I'm aiming to do a lot more of that and talking about how we professionalize the industry. I write a blog, and I've been lucky enough to be given the accolade of a top 10 PR blog for the second year running. And I'm also increasingly asked to speak about influencer marketing by traditional media, by both mainstream media and the trade media. So that's me.
Yeah, right.
Sorry if I were big-noting myself too much. But yeah, that kind of sets out my stall, I suppose.
Look, this is why we wanted you on. I read your blog. We connected on LinkedIn. So yes, we know you are incredibly knowledgeable when it comes to this space.
Yeah, exactly. And further to that, why this concerted interest in the industry, and how long have you been playing this? How long has been your stretch in this industry?
Well, you know, I'm an old bloke now. I'll be 50 this year. I can't believe it. But all of my career has been in journalism in public relations and marketing services. I've always been on the periphery of what influence is and what what public relations is and does, and what journalists do. And I think influencer marketing is fast moving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's growing at speed, but it's still young enough to be able to be molded. And that's why I think in a very small way that I can leave my imprint on the industry, certainly in the UK market, on just, where does PR, come in, and where are the boundaries around public relations? Yeah. Where are the boundaries around advertising and marketing? Who owns it? Who leads it? All these sorts of questions. They're kind of, the territory's still up for grabs a little bit. And so it can be shaped, I think, a little bit and nudged in the right direction.
Oh, that's interesting.
I think influencer marketing, it for sure, is enjoying a growth spurt. But mm-hmm. like many nascent industries, it's also suffering from growing pains. And what I try and do in my blogs is kind of just take a step back and, see who, if someone's throwing shade on the discipline, just wondering why they are and what acts.
Yeah.
What acts do they have? Why? What angle are they coming from, and why? And there's usually, a counter argument or a reason why the industry is sometimes has some shade thrown against it. And that's not to say that all influencers are saints. That would be absurd for me to say. There's influencer fraud, and there's bad practice with the industry. But there is within any industry. They're bad accountants as well as many good accountants.
Good ones,
100%.
Yeah,
and I think. Leading on from that, obviously it's growing rapidly. Do you think that the skills required to manage it effectively is growing at the same pace? Or is there even enough skills around to cope with the growth and demand?
So I think, and that's a great question. I think to unpack it, there are probably two parts to your question. So are existing influencer marketing practitioners, are they keeping up with the increasing sophistication mm-hmm. demanded within the industry? And then secondly, are there enough bodies, are there enough people who are available to effectively service that demand?
Correct. And also know what they're doing.
Yeah,
well, let me think. Well, I think increasingly, influencer marketing is becoming a two-speed discipline.
Yeah,
I think that there are lots of companies that are just starting out and they're just using it for the first time, and their use of the channel is tactical. It's test and learn.
Yeah,
but there are other conversely, there are other companies that are racing ahead and they're building influencer marketing into their DNA of their corporate structure. It's part of their customer journey, running right the way through from research and development, right through consideration to decision making and beyond. And so for them, influencer marketing is strategic. So are there enough people? I think there's a commercial imperative. If there's money to be made, and brands increasingly are becoming more savvy to what can be done, and the strategic impact. And the benefits of that, of influencer marketing, they will demand better from the practitioners undertaking the activations. And yes, and I think absolutely at a grassroots level, we as an industry need to do better at demonstrating best practice and getting more people through universities to know the fundamentals. So, I'm a co-chair of the CPR, the Chartered Institute of Public Relations, their influencer marketing panel. I'm also on the steering committee of the Branded Content and Marketing Association. I'm on the editorial board of Talking Influencers, which is a great online magazine, I'm sure you both know.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm also on the advisory board of the Influencer Marketing Show, and I lecture about influencer marketing. And that's not to say it's all about me and how great, but it demonstrates that there are, partly that it's all about me and I'm great, but mainly there are different ways to try and pull the industry up, and in a very small way. I'm trying to do that at sort of university, undergraduate and postgraduate level.
Amazing.
and at practitioner level as well. But I'm just one of many people, but we are this kind of answers helps reinforce an answer to your earlier question on, you know, why am I interested in it? Mm-hmm. I think it's the industry is still young enough to be able to be malleable.
Absolutely.
And that's what I'm trying to help with.
Love that. You've also just mentioned you obviously on a lot of boards, so you're kind of in the thick of it, but you also speak at all these conferences, which is fantastic, by the way.
Thank you.
What is the most, like, single most common question that you get asked most frequently from your clients when it comes to influencer marketing and speaking at these panels?
Well, it depends on the audience, you know, and I've spoken with, I get to speak a lot, which is, you know, a great privilege, and it also helps, you know, the feedback that I get and the questions really help me inform what I write about what I lecture about. So it's a great sort of feedback loop. But often I'm asked to speak at financial services events, and they're sort of middle-aged, middle-class, white guys in grey suits, much like me. And they're eager to learn, but they're sceptical. And so the question that they like to ask is, you know, is it a fad? And I'm not on Snapchat, or will it work for me in a regulated industry?
Yeah,
you know, but mainly, I suppose the question. You know, so the main ones are: is it a fad, and how do you measure it? They cut the way right the way through whatever audience I'm speaking with.
I feel like that's pretty on par from what we also get.
Yeah,
people kind of look at you like, oh, in a year or two, influencers
it'll be
not
all
gonna
gone.
You know, be anywhere, and then also go ROI. What's your ROI? And you're like, well, it depends on what you want to measure. What's your objective? Like, let's go.
Depends on your budget, but of course, it depends on your communications
of course.
Objectives and also your corporate objectives. Absolutely. Yep. So there's no one silver bullet what's one metric, because it depends on what your objective is, how long you've got to meet that objective, and how much you've got to spend on the objective.
Exactly.
Those are things. But the flip side of it is that with being asked questions, is it a fad, and how do you measure? They're easy to answer. So it shows that people are interested. They just want to be convinced.
Correct.
And there's now a stack of reports and big business moving in and big money moving into the industry to give these people, those doubters, that sort of level of comfort that it's not going to be a fad.
No, exactly. And I think from that, were you saying influencer marketing is still young enough to be molded? We also look at influencers. Obviously, when we speak about influencers, we reference social media influencers mostly. And they obviously live in this world on their platforms, on the Twitters, on the Instagrams. Do you think that those platforms are molded by the influencers? And how is that reacting to the potential threat? Or is it the other way around, that the platforms are molding the influencers?
That's a tremendously good question.
Thank you.
I don't know if I've got a tremendously good answer. So, what comes first? I mean,
chicken or
Instagram.
Egg?
chicken or egg. Well, if you look at Instagram, you know, it's by far the powerhouse platform for B2C influencer. Certainly in North America, certainly in Europe, and I'm guessing for you guys in South Africa as well. And if you look at the three big verticals for sponsored content, it's fashion mm-hmm. and beauty, it's cosmetics, and it's food.
Yep.
And if you combine those three verticals, you've got about 70% of sponsored content just for those three verticals. So, you know, I think, you know, popularity begets popularity. And so, yes, you know, people see these sorts of, you know, highly stylized and visual content, and they want to create more of the same.
Yeah.
So, yes, so that does steer it. But, of course, Zuckerberg is only in the business of making money. That's a given. And, you know, and Adam Mosseri, now heading up Instagram, you know, he was in charge of Facebook's news feed, wasn't he, for several years.
Yeah.
So they're playing a long game, and it's going to be moving towards e-commerce. It's going to be moving towards, a throttling of organic content, of organic reach, I would imagine.
We've already seen that happening.
Well, we're seeing anecdotal evidence of it. I don't know if we can actually categorically say that there has been a shift in the algorithm. But yes, there are plenty of creators that are saying, yeah, I'm not getting, you know, the attention that I was getting. So, you know, I don't know really how to answer your question. But I think, you know, platforms like Instagram and Facebook and TikTok, they have a strategy. When they set up shop, but there's often an emergent strategy that pulls them to the left or the right, and they have to adapt to that. And so you know, I don't know if it was always the long term game for you know, for influencers to really inhabit Instagram.
Sure.
But now they are. They're trying to find ways to utilize that through, you know, creator profiles, through brand content, ads, and all of the other that, and to try and make money from it.
Yeah.
There's a long answer, and I don't know if the answer you're looking for, but it's the best I can do this afternoon.
No problem.
Think it makes sense that first came the platform, and then there's a strategy obviously laid out, but then you don't always know how people are going to adapt to it. So then when you see what works and what people like, you kind of need to pivot that as well.
Yeah.
So it's kind of both.
I think so, and I think there's going to be a third wave that's just formulating now. So you've got the infrastructure, you've got the social media platforms, you've got the creators building a commercial sort of a ecosystem now on there. The third wave is going to be companies that sort of they work with creators, not brands or platforms like influencer marketing, but it's the next wave. It's going to be, you know, I don't know, like, and how do creators get a mortgage, you know, because you can't go to a bank and say, you know, I've got 300,000 followers or, you know, whatever.
Here's my give me a house.
So you're going to have, you know, you're going to have, I think, another wave of industry that's working with influencers, you know, it's about how to grow away from the platform. It's how to fund the next phase of your business. It is professional services. In the UK, we've got a couple of insurance providers offering influencer first products. There's going to be a whole new sort of ecosystem that's not about the platform, it's not about influencer marketing, but it's something else. It's something next door to it.
I'm very interested to see what that would look like. It kind of makes me excited.
And so the trap when you play in a space is always that you throw around all those words and sometimes they lose meaning. And now I want us to hone and zero in on influence. So as marketers, what does it look like? Who really has influence? Is there determinant and measurable for what influence is?
Okay. I think there's a misconception surrounding the terms influence and an audience size. And I think they're often used interchangeably. Absolutely. Still in 2020. It was the argument, you know, we're having in 2016.
Still going.
We're still having the same
still
argument.
Fighting that fight.
So influence and audience size, you know, they're often used interchangeably.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's wrong to do so. Popularity or the size of an online audience, in other words, reach, isn't the same as influence.
Yeah.
Influence is the ability, as we know, you know, it's the ability to change an opinion or change a behavior.
Correct.
So in other words, it's not how far you can push that content out. It's the power you have to pull your community in towards an action, and that's what influence is. You know, it's the power to change something, not the push, but it's the pull
just
into
the
your
pull.
You have over your community to affect an action. So influence then moves beyond the vanity metrics of theoretical reach or how many likes you've got or how many, you know, comments you've got, like, yeah, cool post, you know, or just an emoji, and it moves towards, you know, a more meaningful engagement, you know, some sort of substantive comment that nudges the conversation forward. You know, influence is more, you know, measured by how many swipe ups you've had, or how many coupons were downloaded, or how many people signed a petition, or bought the product, or went to the microsite, or saved that post for later. You know, it's beyond the engagement, moving away from the vanity metrics, more towards, you know, intent metrics, and ultimately towards impact metrics. And that's how we need to be able to measure influence and the attribution that the influence brings to overall campaigns.
Yeah. And let's talk about transparency.
Yes.
What does that have? What impact does it have on campaigns? The full disclosure that, you know what, this is a campaign, I'm paid for it, and I'm partnering with a big name brand. What is the net effect of that on your influencer marketing campaigns?
Well, I think as consumers, we have a love affair with influencer-generated content, but it's got to be founded on three provisos. The first proviso is that it's not ad after ad after ad after ad after ad. There's got to be a decent ratio between sponsored content and organic content.
100%
It's got to be it's got to be acceptable to us. Yeah. And it's probably, you know, one in three, better yet, one in four, or even fewer. So, you know, there's got to be a nice ratio, right? But we still love influencer content.
Of course.
Yeah.
The second proviso is that we've got to get something out of that content. As consumers, you know, we've got to derive some value from it. It's got to be funny. It's got to be interesting. It's got to be entertaining. It's got to be educational. It's got to be inspirational. It's got to be aspirational. It's got to be, you know, not all of those, but it's got to be something. We've got to get some sort of some value from it.
It's not just a pretty selfie.
Because, you know, we might like that, but it's not going to push us towards something else.
No. Yeah.
It's not going to empower us to change something. And I think the third reason that, you know, the third proviso that we will continue to love influencer content is that it's got to be honest and it's got to be transparent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If it's an ad, it's got to be obviously identifiable as an ad. Right. Yeah. And, you know, 61% of women said they wouldn't engage with an influencer sponsored content if it doesn't feel genuine.
Yeah.
Makes sense. That's according to a global survey done by Blog Loving from memory. You know, and 86% of people are likely to take their business to a competitor when there's a lack of transparency on social. Okay, but that's from Sprout Social. That's an interesting report from the beginning of last year.
Right.
And in the UK, 67% of consumers said they would unfollow an influencer if they found out that they had dramatically misrepresented themselves or their lifestyle to followers. So, you know, we talk in the abstract, and, you know, lots of cases where influencers, they think they're being cute by, you know, not declaring an ad, they might even come under pressure by a brand to not disclose that there's an ad. But actually, you know, millennials have grown up on you know, I've already run this before this. I'll be 50 this year, but millennials have grown up with the social web.
Yeah.
They're savvy. Consumers, they know when an ad is an ad or when it's organic, and so, you know, they will switch off in their droves if they find out that, you know, a so-called bit of organic content is actually a bit of paid for content. Yeah. And once they unfollow you, you lose your influence. So it's critical, not necessarily from a moral obligation to protect your followers and look after your followers, but also there's a commercial imperative. You know, if you know, people will vote with their feet and turn against not just the influencer but the brand as well.
No, exactly, and it also kind of lends to that credibility that your audience expect from you.
Absolutely. Yeah, in one hand, you're so right.
So earlier you mentioned that most the biggest sectors are, I think, beauty, fashion, and food. So do you think it is overcrowded, and can sectors be overcrowded? And if it is, then how does a brand kind of stand out from the crowd when they do influencer marketing in those sectors?
I think yes. Some surveys say that the third vertical is travel. Others say that it is food and drink. I think it's still food and drink, but for South Africa, it might well be travel, for example. How do brands stand out? I think that there are two ways. Be better at it is one, obviously, you know, and look somewhere else, look laterally. So, you know, be better at it is is find the most appropriate influencer for your mm-hmm. campaign and for your brand. And it sounds like an obvious, you know, a statement, but, yeah. be swayed by data, but be driven by human insight. And what I mean by that is, yes, of course, you need to know that their audience maps onto your brand's audience. Sure, and you need data for that. You need to know that, you know, the gender of the audience is the right for you. The age is the right age. The location is the right sort of location. Mm. You need to know that they don't buy fake followers or fake engagement.
Yeah.
Absolutely, and you need third party tools to work that out for you.
Yeah.
Absolutely, but you also need to have your hands on the softer side of the skill set. On, you know, do they produce content with the right tone of voice for your brand? Do they share the same values and worldview as your brand? Do the colorways kind of match, you know, with your brand? You know, have they ever worked with a competitor of yours or recently? Are they an advocate of your brand? You might not have worked with them before, but have they ever said anything about your brand in the past? And if they have, has the sentiment positive? Been positive or negative or neutral? You know, find out who's the most appropriate. And, you know, ultimately, it's about storytelling. It's not about advertising. It's about storytelling. And as consumers, and that goes back to the earlier point, we're saying, does it give us value?
Yeah.
And if that bit of content gives us value, and we, you know, it's funny or it's sad or it's entertaining or educational, then, you know, then we'll love it and we'll share it with our friends and we'll act upon it.
Most of you know that Influential is our podcast sponsor, but did you know that my co-host Anne heads up the agency, and that is the first ever boutique agency in South Africa that specializes in developing strategy for influencer marketing. Anne and her team are experts in the field, and they've spent years honing their skills and knowledge about influencer marketing and at some of the country's biggest PR and media agencies. The moment that you think you might want an influencer campaign, make sure to call or email them first, because without strategy, you might not have the outcomes that you would like and are looking for. In addition to talking all things influence on this podcast, Anne also puts together the fantastic Influential newsletter that comes out every month. And this is another way for you to keep up to date with the industry. The link to latest newsletter is in the show notes. Check it out. And if you like, please subscribe. Anne's contact details are also on there. Let's keep the conversation flowing.
So it's a slightly trite statement, but I think there's some value in it. We must try harder to be better at storytelling. And the second thing is, you know, we've got to link our company to its values, and that might mean think laterally as well. You know, not so if it's a fashion brand, it doesn't always have to be, you know, a model that does the work that you do an activation with. And there are plenty of brands that are doing that well, and there are plenty of brands that are doing that really badly. And I think, you know, in 2020, we're going to see a lot more of this jump on the purpose bandwagon.
Yes.
And so whether you call it purpose washing or, you know, woke washing or whatever, you're going to see, you know, a lot of brands jumping on to demonstrating their credentials in, you know, in climate change or veganism or whatever it is. And that will not work if it's not part of your DNA. Consumers will smell that, from a thousand paces, and they will vote with their feet and switch off. You know, whether it was Kylie Jenner a couple of years ago with Pepsi, the Pepsi Cola. You know, that was an extraordinary
definitely
case.
One of but the Jenners.
That's right. But yeah, but we're going to see a lot more of those brands getting it wrong, jumping on the whether it's gender equality, whether it's people of color or whatever it is, and they're going to get it wrong because it's not really what they believe in. It's not really part of their corporate DNA. So, you know, I'll give you an example. The Body Shop does this well, or certainly has done this well in the past. It works with influencers in two very separate ways. One, to sell products, you know, and it's got 1,000 products on its product line, but two, to promote and make positive change. So it worked with a handful of influencers a couple of years ago to get a petition to end cruelty on the testing, the cruelty on animals and the testing on cosmetics, you know. And they set themselves a goal of getting, I think it was 8 million signatures in a year. So it wasn't just, you know, the objective wasn't getting 8 million likes.
Yes.
It was getting 8 million signatures on a petition.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And they did that, and partly they did that because they did it in 10 months. You know, yeah, absolutely amazing. They did set themselves this absurd goal: 8 million in a year. They got 8.2 million in 10 months.
That's wonderful.
They took the petition to the United Nations, and now it becomes more of a sort of a lobbying exercise to try and get each individual country to change their individual laws. But the point is that for the Body Shop, you know, the founded in the early 70s by Anita Ruddock, that sort of fight against cruelty for animals is part of their DNA.
Yes,
they've been doing it for 40 years. So it's not sort of jumping on the latest bandwagon. It is something that is, you know, really part of who they are as an entity.
Yeah.
And so if brands can do that, then they'll be, you know, then they will do exceptionally well.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a major theme for 2020 about, you know, being purpose driven, but only if it is a purpose and not jumping on the latest bandwagon.
And I think that brands in the last couple of years have learned that they have to align those values so strictly because of scandals that have broken with like the Logan Pauls and PewDiePies. You don't want to be attached to that, you know, when that scandal breaks. So it is very much more, let's first see if those values align before we even go anywhere.
Absolutely. But you know what? You know, increasingly, as you know, as we as professional practitioners that believe in best in class practice, we've for years been effectively vetting the influencers that we want to work with.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? Increasingly, influencers are vetting us.
Of
as
course.
Well, because they realise absolutely that they're a masthead of one. You know, they're a media masthead of one.
Yeah.
They've got their own corporate identity, their own brand that they have to protect and guard jealously. And they want to be in the limelight or in business for the long haul.
Of course.
They are very careful, increasingly more careful with the brands that they do brand collaborations with. Because of their own sort of corporate identity and know what is right, but also their followers, the community that they've built around them, will hold their heels to the fire and say, "No, this doesn't pass the smell test. This doesn't sit right with us that you're now, I don't know, you know, promoting a sausage. I don't know. I'm trying to say, a meat brand when you say veganism.
Giving an
absurd example. But what I'm trying to say is that the vetting is increasingly going both ways.
Yeah,
and not just the brands vetting the influencer, but the other way around.
Yeah.
Which also holds the brand just as accountable as the influencer, which I love.
Absolutely, and that's why, you know, as we, you know, we all say that have been in the industry for a while, it's about trying to find an appropriate brand fit to create a long-term mutually beneficial relationship. And a lot of, you know, a lot of the influencer marketing fails are actually influencer advertising fails. They're short-term transactional activations, and when neither brand nor influencer has taken the time and the effort to get to know each other and to find that bond, then you get sort of half rate sort of content creation.
Mm.
Yeah.
But you also don't neither sort of cares that much. That's why, you know, when you had that Scott Disick case from a few years ago.
Oh, that was just awful.
You know, the only thing he had to do was, you know, was change the cut, and he couldn't even be bothered
just
to
copy and
change,
paste and like
change
take
the cut and paste
caption.
Yeah, absolutely extraordinary. But, you know, so that's because he didn't care in the brand. And,
no.
You know...
he doesn't use it. 0%.
Exactly right. Exactly
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
And you know more for the brand, because they should have seen his style, seen that, of course, he had a high profile because of Kourtney Kardashian. that's fine. But you can see in the sort of person that he worked with and the sort of content that he created in the past. Mm-hmm. And it was flimsy at best.
100%. But they got called out, which is fantastic. So that bring us to when brands are doing their marketing planning, when and why should they consider incorporating influencer marketing in their strategy, you think?
Why? I would say, what's the alternative? You know, and again, it's a trite response, but you know, the media is fragmented from print to radio to television to online and now to social media. And we're no longer reading newspapers, so why stick an ad in a newspaper? You know, the drive to advertise in them is dropping as a direct knock-on effect of the spiral of news readerships, newspaper readership. Now, to give you an example, in the UK, you got the Daily Mail.
Yep.
The average age of the reader is 58. The Telegraph is 61.
What?
Man.
And the same thing is happening with free-to-air television. You know, we if you look at again the UK specific figures, but the average age for a BBC One viewer is 61, and the average age on BBC Two is 62. So how are you going to get? How are you going to talk? In a voice that resonates with someone below 60, let alone below 20.
Yeah.
that's why the companies have to turn to social media influencers to tap into those younger audiences.
Yeah.
It's no longer served by newspapers, no longer served by the TV. You know, over a third of 16 to 24-year-olds now use social media for when they're doing their product research, when they're finding out a product, when they're surfacing products to buy. You know, over a third. So as consumers, as consumers, we're three times as likely to follow an influencer on social media as we are to follow a brand directly.
No, exactly.
That is the power of influencer marketing. Yeah. You know, again, it's a trite response, but but what is the alternative? It can't be traditional media.
No.
Now that's not to say
we'll get rid of legacy
media completely, but it means the most powerful influencer marketing campaigns are programs, fully integrated programs that might latch on to a bit of television because clearly we do still watch television. You know,
absolutely.
So it's latching on to the programs that we watch, not just blindly putting an ad in, at 9 o'clock on a Tuesday evening, because that was what used to work 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And of course, out of home advertising, it still works. You know, public relations still works, but only when it's part of a more integrated program.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, the stats showed, I think last year's relatable state of the influencer market or industry showed that 70% of people go onto social media before they make a purchasing decision, because you want to know what your peers are saying about it. So it makes complete sense.
Yeah.
For sure. And, you know, that holds true for the B2B. You know, this conversation has really been about B2C, business to consumer influencer marketing. But the same rule of thumb applies to the B2B.
Yeah.
You know, you're somewhere between 60 and 80% through the buying process decision before you actually talk to a salesperson. The B2B, you've looked online, and you've asked subject matter experts, their opinion before you actually contact a company representative.
Then to that point, how important do you think it is to have an influencer marketing strategy before you set off on a campaign?
Why do you need a strategy? We've all heard, the US President Benjamin Franklin's line, if you fail to plan, you're planning to fail. And again, I'm all up for these trite responses and homilies. So bear with me.
No, without a plan,
without a plan, how are you going to know if you've arrived at your meeting your objective? Without a plan, how do you even know if you're going in the right direction?
Yeah.
So that's always the same when people look at me like, how do you know you were successful?
Makes no sense. And again, the most effective influencer marketing activations are integrated programs.
Correct.
So you need to have a strategy in place, because you're working in concert with your creative industry brethren, whether it's in PR, whether it's in marketing, whether it's in SEO, whether it, you know, wherever it is, to try and pull out the best bits of what they do to make the overarching program work. And of course, it's as much about change management at that point as it is about, you know, influencer marketing activations. That's why you need something written down. And by writing it down, having a strategy, it helps you articulate exactly what you're trying to do, why you're doing it, when you need to be done, you know, how much money you've got at your disposal, you know, and where the gaps are, and how, who can fill those gaps.
No, exactly. I 100% agree with that.
And what are your views on the growth of nano influencers vis-a-vis brands increasingly targeting this influencer channel?
Okay. I think you've got to scroll back and look again, you know, look at your objectives and raise this point a bit earlier. You know, what are your communication objectives? What are your corporate objectives? But then be realistic. What are your budgets? You know, what are your timelines? What other resources do you have available? Because, you know, even, you know, working with nano influencers or micro influencers, they might not charge as much, but they might be, you know, sort of logistically burdensome to get them on board, to give them all creative briefs, to give them all to give them all contracts, to monitor what they're doing, to all of that sort of stuff. So that's not without a cost, you know, and you know, third party tools to help find them. However, you know, there's a lot of talk about the industry, about micro influencers, nano influencers, and this conversation has been going back 2016 and before. There's that well-known pyramidic model where the more followers you have, then the lower the engagement rate tends to be. But again, you know, but you, are you telling me that if you had the budget to hire a Kardashian, that wouldn't sell product? You know, that would shift the product, you know, and reach, we now say, you know, is against influencer marketing, but there is a place in it. If we just want to drive awareness, if no one knows our company, if we're moving into a new territory geographically or a new sort of product area, then someone with a big reach profile would work driving awareness.
That's your objective, 100%.
It won't drive. It probably wouldn't drive them through to consideration. No. It wouldn't drive them through to the decision making. But they would know about
exactly
it.
Exactly. If people just want you to know, happy days.
Yeah.
Happy days. And so that goes back to an earlier, you know, discussion we were having about what is a strategy, you know. And you might say, yes, you know, the first phase is about awareness. We need people with big reach. Real reach, true reach, not theoretical reach. But, you know, and then whilst we've done that, we need to work with a different set of influencers, those that will drive consideration, those the subject matter experts, those the people that know what they're talking about. And then once we've done that, we might say, right, now it's about actually getting people to sign up, buy the product. And then you will move on to your nano influencers because they have the highest engagement rate and people really trust those the most. Yeah. So it's not a binary. For me, it's not a binary answer. It's all about nano. It's all about micro. It is about your objectives and your budget and the timeline and how much other, you know, resources you're able to tap into.
Yeah.
I think it's also brands have only really in the last year or two in South Africa really woken up to that there is such a thing as nano influencers and that they actually really good you, or you can use them really well, even though they don't have millions of followers. So people are seeing the power in them now only, which is fantastic.
Yeah,
I think that is, and that's true sort of brand advocacy, and that is, you know, arguably different to influencer marketing, or where does it sit? And I think that's part of the issue we have within influencer marketing, because it is now such a broad church. What is influencer marketing? You know, discuss. You can write a very long and slightly dull dissertation on it.
I think we should write a co-blog post on that, Scott.
I would love to do that. And, you know, we need to find, you know, seriously, I would love to do that, Anne. We need to find a shared language, a common language, a lexicon that we all know. So when, you know, when the mainstream media has a downer on influencer marketing, is it really celebrity endorsement that they've got a downer on, you know, or is it ex-TV, ex-reality TV contestants that know they've only got a very short window of in the sun, and they will sell any products as quickly as possible because they know they've got 18 months before they're going to reach oblivion.
Maura Higgins is my girl.
you know it. Is that influencer marketing? Is B2B influencer marketing? Is influencer relations the same? Mm. Is affiliate marketing and review sites, is that influencer marketing? You know, where does it stop? And you know, we're in danger of throwing the baby out with the bathwater by saying that influencer marketing is everything. You know,
yeah.
Actually, you know, they're different shades of it. And yeah. You know, when someone says, when someone talks about the media, we're now, you know, we're sufficiently educated and nuanced enough to know that the word the media can mean the Financial Times at one end, or I don't know, the Daily Star at the other end, or podcasts. It means everything, and we can tell the difference. We can know the different shades of what it is, and that's what we need to get to with influencer marketing as well.
Yeah. No, I agree. When I was still in PR, and when bloggers came out, then it was new media. So you differentiate between traditional and new media, and I think we're getting back into that space.
Yeah.
No, I think so. And then it wasn't traditional media. And then it became legacy media, didn't it? And
yeah.
Then, I think, as we said right at the beginning of this interview, you know, the industry is growing rapidly, and that's why I love it.
Yeah.
And I could, some sort small sort of thumbprint on it, but you know, it is they're great. Growth spurts, but also some growing pains. And when something grows, you need to be able to throw a rope around it and say what it is and what it isn't. And part of that is this best practice. And part of best practice means having a shared common language that practitioners use. And and we know what the differences are. And, you know, anyway, here ends the sermon. Right.
Yeah, exactly. And Scott, speaking of the 50 shades of influencer marketing, what are your thoughts on employee advocacy?
Well, I think it's
especially within your B2B space.
Yeah. I think it's a fundamental element of B2B influencer marketing, and I really think that B2B influencer marketing is due to have its moment in the sun. I think that employee advocacy is fundamental, but it has to be approached sensitively.
Okay.
From a corporate point of view, you can't simply demand that your employees will all start sharing your marketing collateral, like 1,000 tiny megaphones.
Yeah,
you know, that is a turn off for them. It's a turn off for their audience. It's a turn off all around. You know, what you can do is you can provide your subject matter experts, those employees, with the tools to enable them to scale up their influence online and to create their own separate voice, but a voice that complements rather than broadcasts the corporate messaging.
Mm.
So it complements what the marketing department is saying. It doesn't just ape it. It doesn't just echo it. But it adds its own interpretation of it, and it talks its own language, and that I think is super powerful, and it's super powerful for the company, obviously, because it has it should have, you know, we've just been talking about advocates and nano influencers, you know, often in big B2B enterprises, the biggest influencers or potential influencers are internal. They're the subject matter experts.
Yeah.
They're product managers or whatever within the company that you meet them in a meeting or over lunch, and you know that you can learn so much from them on a one-to-one basis. It's how you can tap into that and scale up that influence and make them influential.
Exactly.
And it should be, you know, it should be beneficial to that subject matter expert because you know it all, you know. We no longer, this is another trite statement, alert, you know, but we no longer have jobs for life. What we do have is our subject matter expertise, and that is transportable. And so we need those transportable skills. We need to be an expert in something for when we can, you know, so we can commercialize ourselves and move industry or move jobs, either because we see a better option or because that something detrimental happens in that company. It's downsized or bought out or we're made redundant or whatever it is.
Yeah.
No, exactly. Scott, so we're almost at the end of our conversation.
Come on, this is just beginning.
I know.
I've had another coffee and I'm ready to go. We've got another 2 more hours at least in this.
We will definitely invite you back, though.
Yeah.
For sure. Do you have 3 top reasons for our listeners why influence marketing must be part of their media schedule?
Okay. Well, I think we've covered these already, but I would go back and say, what's the alternative? You know, how are you going to reach how are you going to reach this audience? Well, first of all, you need to know what your audience is, and their age and their beliefs and all that stuff that they like doing. But I would imagine that you, once you do that, you'll see that they don't watch linear television, they don't read newspapers like they used to. So what's the alternative? In reality, once you've done your research, the second thing is really it's a corollary from that. It works. Big businesses and big money are moving into the space, whether it's Martin Sorrell with his S4 Capital buying Media Monks and the Media Monks merging with IMA, the Influencer Marketing Agency.
Look at L'Oreal. 75%
of their ad spent now on influencer marketing. Look at Coty buying Kylie. You have that misquote, or at least half the quote, from Keith Weed, until last year, the CMO at Unilever. All of the media pounced on the first bit of his speech, where he was saying that, talking about his three commitments against influencer marketing, i.e. that, that about influencer fraud. What nobody really picked up on was that in the second bit of his speech, he was saying how powerful influencer marketing was because of the relatable transference, and understanding and trust that inherent in influencer marketing.
Yeah, exactly.
And guess what? The first thing he does after leaving Unilever after 30 plus
years. Didn't he invest in an agency for influencer marketing?
He did. A matter of weeks later, his first investment was in Tribe, an influencer marketing platform.
It was wonderful.
And guess what? Unilever, I think sort of six or seven weeks after Weed left, they announced that they'd helped raise $12.5 million to put into Creator IQ, another influencer marketing platform. So, don't trust me. Trust the people that
have access to
money. Big businesses, big budgets, big pockets. The third thing I'd say, it works well. Influencer works well when it's integrated as part of a considered multidiscipline strategy. So I'm not saying it's influencer marketing is binary, switch everything from this to that.
No.
You obviously have to know your market, you have to know your audience, you have to know where they hang out online, know your objectives. But often it's a multidiscipline approach that really wins with influencer marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100% agree. Thanks, Scott.
Yeah, so Scott, where do our listeners find you? Online, social media, everywhere in between?
And your blog?
If this hasn't put people off and they're still willing to hear, I would love to have them on board at, I write regularly at sabguthrie.info. But if you just do, if you do a Google search for Scott Guthrie Influencer, then I should come up as well. But I aim to write a blog, maybe 2 blog posts a week.
And for Kick-Ass Influencer Marketing Strategy, where do they find you?
We are on Twitter and LinkedIn at Influential SA without the I, because we are the cool kids.
Yeah.
Please come join us, join our community, and let's just have a chat.
Yeah. Influencer marketing? Is it the beginning of the best to come in marketing?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think I agree with Scott. Everything is integrated.
Thank
and
you.
Everything needs to speak to each other.
Exactly.
Then we've got a winning strategy.
Yeah.
Well, I think as Karen Carpenter once put it so eloquently, it's only just begun. Let the big businesses and let the big brains tell you what's going to happen. And they're increasingly putting the money into influencer marketing. Yeah.
They are testing it all the time. We can watch and learn from their mistakes.
Yeah.
And there we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, Scott Guthrie. Scott, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your your insights and knowledge from that part of the world. Thank you. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so very much. From a cold and gloomy London to a warm, the air conditioning too high. And
yeah.
Thank you very much for having me. I thoroughly enjoyed myself.
It's a huge pleasure. Thank you so much, Scott. And we'll catch you on LinkedIn, but yeah, we'll definitely have you back.
Definitely. Awesome.
Thank you so much, you two.
Thank you so much, guys.
And to everybody else at home, we love you. Until next time.
Till next time, guys. Goodbye.